often enough do I dream of all Elbenside. And when I do, we're drinking whiskey. Oh, maybe just a couple beers. Nora tells me all about the world and the way he likes to see it. And every time I wake up, I wish that our Burnside Lord was still here. Time I wake up, I wish that our Burnside was still here. That's a story about R.L. Burnside.
And we are live in the studio with Mr. Ted Drozdowski.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Well, very well, Ted. Thanks for coming by, man, good. All the way from Tennessee.
Yep, and it's always good to be live.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Speaking of live, we're talking, oh, I already said Big Shoes, the CD and video of their latest album, and Ted brought his guitar in the studio. He's going to play for us, too. And he's in town last night, played the Lizard Lounge.
Yep, we did the Lizard Lounge last night, Providence the night before, West Bridgewater before that. And now I got a couple days off, and then I'm doing a solo gig at Passim this coming Thursday, opening for Brendan Hogan and Peter Parcek.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah. And then on Friday, we're up at the Back Page in Lowell, and then out in Northampton on Saturday, and then down to D.C. and going to hang out in D.C. for an extra day. I'm going to be a guest on Bluesville with Bill Wax.
Oh, great.
On Monday afternoon. So that'll be fun, too.
That's excellent.
Love that station. Yeah. Love Bill. He's a great fan of this music. Knows a lot about it.
That's excellent. Unbelievable. And speaking of the music, the way you've captured this whole, I saw you on The Devil Gods years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the way, the way that you've grabbed, it's such... there's something about R.L. Burnside, Junior Kimbrough, and all those guys from the Mississippi Hill music. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, Mississippi Hill Country. And the other one for me who kind of makes the triumvirate is Jessie Mae Hemphill.
Yeah, I didn't know too much about her, but seeing the video and actually listening to some of your music, I know the influence she's had on you. But
yep, and that's the thing. Jessie didn't really, because Junior and I all recorded for Fat Possum, which was pretty high profile at that point.
Yep.
Jessie, by the time Fat Possum came along, was about 3 years away from having a stroke. So she might have cut a record for them at one point, but she had her stroke, and for the last 10 years of her life, really couldn't use the left side of her body so well.
Oh, that's too bad.
So she couldn't play guitar. She could play a little tambourine, play a little drum with one hand, but that was about it.
Didn't Tim from Tim Duffy, right? Didn't he do something with her? Why does that ring a bell, Jessie Mae Hemphill?
I don't think he did anything with her, but this woman named Olga Wilhelmine from down in the Delta did a record with her after she was already disabled. And, Jessie sings on it and stuff. But it's not, it's not really the same as it was when she was in her, her prime. Because her prime was great. And if people want to see her, you can go to YouTube. But the thing that was great about Jessie, too, is that she was just such a historically significant person, I think. Because her uncle, Sid, was recorded by the Library of Congress in the 40s and the 60s by the Lomaxes.
Yeah.
And Sid taught her everything that he knew. He taught her all about playing drums for Mississippi Fife and Drum Music. He taught her how to play guitar and harmonica and all that. And she would normally play solo, and she'd have a kick drum with her left foot. She always wore high heels, so on her left heel, she had a half tambourine that would wrap perfectly around the back of the heel and the toe of her shoe, so she could just move her foot and make that go. And then she played guitar and sang and always looked fantastic.
You're kidding me. I'm going to have to go out and I'm going to have to find out more information on this woman because it just sounds incredible.
Yeah, she was great. She was absolutely great.
It's totally amazing that you could take this music and keep it going and bring it to the forefront because now R.L. Burnside's gone and all these people have gone.
Yep.
And it is. And I have to revert back to the DVD because one of the things that really struck me in that DVD was... you were outside, I don't know if it was a Slippery Noodle, but one of the places you were, it doesn't really matter where you were, but in the DVD, like right about in the middle of it, you said that somebody was arguing with you, with your drummer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rob was talking about that. Yep.
About you guys aren't blues.
Right, right.
And
right.
I was like, wow, because I've had people, it's very different, but it is blues. It's right. just raw. It's totally raw. And it's right. amazing how you've grasped that from these people, R.L. Burnside and all these people, how you've grasped that and been able to take it forward.
Well, you know, like those guys were the people who inspired me to play this music musically, to transition out of playing rock and improvise music and stuff. But I think the band is kind of rooted in some of the earliest blues. You know, I think we're kind of rooted in hill country and Delta blues, country style blues, but it's electric, like the people I knew who played it.
Yeah.
And then because of my own background as a rock-based improviser, and because of Sonny Chirac, the great jazz guitar player, the father of American free jazz, he was a friend of mine and a mentor for about the last 8 years of his life as well. So some of my slide playing owes something to Sonny. And, you know, I wasn't born in the Delta, and I'm not 75 years old yet, thankfully. And, you know, so I kind of bring my own thing to it as well. And I feel like we're kind of a bridge between some of the oldest tradition in the blues and where hopefully it could be headed in the future, and connecting with new people and a new audience, and still keeping a valid contemporary art form.
Exactly, which brings me to my next point, which what I was going to say is you're a white guy.
I am a white guy.
Which is...
I noticed that.
No. I mean, not that it...
No, I'm just kidding.
Not that it makes any difference, but it's just that, you know, it's crazy, because now you've got a whole... You've got a whole avenue of people that have come forward now.
It's true.
You have the 10-foot polecats who are doing that.
Yep.
The guitar and drum thing, which I feel... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in speaking out of turn, but I thought you pretty much started that in this area, didn't you?
Well,
you moved down.
The 10-foot polecats told me we did.
Yeah.
So I'll take their word for it. Because I think they're like the preeminent band doing that stuff here.
Yeah, it's funny because Jim Chilson, I have to get back in touch with him. I don't know. I'm on the air and sometimes I'll go in and see people perform and I'll just sit back.
Yep.
I'm not the type of person that comes in and goes, "Hi, I'm Peter Cahill. I'm from WMW. I'm a DJ, blah, blah, blah." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I go in and I just sit back and have a drink. And I've seen the 10-foot polecats a couple times. And they're just phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's
they are.
Phenomenal.
They have a giant amount of energy, and they definitely have that hill country sound nailed down.
But, you know, they do. And now if we could just get if Jim could just get a little of your energies from, you know, going across bars and running around. And I mean, you know, you're a madman live.
Thank you.
You definitely are.
Yeah, no, I like to put a show across.
You do.
Yeah.
And you do. You know, when you lay the guitar in someone's arms and, you know, you totally freak them out and just keep playing, or you're down on the floor, or you're across the bar, or you using... It's just phenomenal.
Thanks, man.
And it's good to see that, because the energy is unbelievable in your show. And like I said, a lot of people... I agree. Blues is... It covers a lot of genres.
It does.
And as far as I can see, that's definitely blues. It's a little loud. It's a little in your face.
Yep.
But it is definitely blues. But the raw, that's where it is. The raw, man. Because these guys that started this, I don't think they could read a lick of music. You know?
Yep. No. And, you know, one guy who we get compared to a lot, especially for people who saw him early on, is Johnny Winter. Because early on in his career, he was really, really raw and, you know, vicious and nasty. And the guitar tone was just, you know, completely badass and that kind of thing. So we hear some of that. And that's an entry point. You know, my thinking is any entry point that people can, you know, kind of use to get into what we're doing, just use it. You know, if whatever reference point feels comfortable. I hear a lot of Johnny Winter from traditional blues fans, and also a lot of Rory Gallagher.
Yeah, true. Yeah, Rory Gallagher, he was wild and off the charts.
Yep.
Yeah, but the rawness is just incredible.
Yeah, you know, I mean, to me, when you're down there, I mean, it's kind of keeping that juke joint tradition thing going, too. You know, like when I play slide, and all the North Mississippi players, they never muted. I used to talk to Jim Dickinson about this.
Yeah.
Because instead of muting the strings to make the slide sound smooth, you want to have some extra sound going so you can fill up that room, especially since most of those bands are one or two guitars and drums.
That's right.
So that's a lot of frequency spectrum you got to fill up with that guitar and that drum kit. So that's what Matt Snow and me try to do when we go out and play. You know, we try to... fill up a lot of that spectrum with the guitar and drum kit.
Well, it works, you know, and it's huge to do that.
Well, it's fun. The Passim gig is going to be fun, too, because I'm going to get to play all the quiet stuff I never get to play. Like the song you just played, that Talking Blues, about hanging out with our old Burnside for a night.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'll get to do that, and it's material I really enjoy, but not necessarily something you can you know, when people are drinking and whooping in a bar, not necessarily something they want to hear.
When you whip them into a frenzy, you don't want to lose them, right? You know, it's like, how do you put the two together?
That's right. You can no longer control the savage beast. You know, you poke the line with a stick. Now you better just keep running.
Well, because now you've got to bring it forward to a whole new generation. Like I said before, R.L. Burnside was relatively, not many people knew about him. A lot of blues people knew about him.
Yep.
At least maybe I'm talking out of turn, but I'm pretty sure I knew about R.L. Burnside, and I always saw him.
Yep.
But he was never, a famous, highly paid musician, and he was the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, he was never at the level of like a Charlie Musselwhite, or obviously not a John Lee Hooker or a Buddy Guy or any of those guys, or even Luther Allison, you know, when Luther was at his peak before he passed away. He never really got to that kind of height. He did end up building a pretty avid following among COD students, which was kind of cool. And part of that was they did some remix albums.
Come on in.
Yep. And they had a booking agent who catered to the college audience for a while there. And also, you know, he had a song on The Sopranos and a couple other TV shows and things too, which is cool.
Yeah, I saw that. Since you mentioned that, he sort of went hand in hand. I have a picture I took at a festival of, it might have been Jazz Fest, as a matter of fact, Junior Kimbrough and R.L. Burnside side by side,
nice,
looking out from the crowd.
Nice.
From the side of the stage to the crowd. And Junior Kimbrough actually went on tour with Iggy Pop.
He did.
At one point.
Iggy. Yep.
And because he did the trance, it was more, it was still in the same vein, but it was a little more repetitive stuff,
yep,
and the kids were going wild over that at the time.
And R.L. toured with John Spencer. That's right.
What, Ass Whiskey in My Pocket?
Ass Pocket,
pocket
of Whiskey.
Full of Whiskey.
Yeah. That was the record they did together.
Yeah. I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for that.
We meant a derriere pocket full of an alcoholic beverage.
The live radio, you know, we're on college radio, you know, we're streaming online and everything, and we have all these rules and regulations and, you know, at the college. I'm not a student. So with that,
you're a student of the blues, my friend.
I am a student of the blues, exactly. With that, would you like to play a tune for us?
Yeah, why don't I play this thing I wrote called Maddie Sweet Maddie, and it's inspired by Fred McDowell, not so much by his slide playing, although Fred's a great slide player, one of my favorites, but more by his storytelling. So I'm going to play this, and Peter, if I need to do anything to move closer or further or turn the amp down or something, you let me know. Will you?
All right, I will.
Maddie, sweet Maddie, what can I get, Lord, for you in jail? Well, Maddie, sweet Maddie, what can I get, Lord, for you in jail? I'm so sorry, Maddie. Well, ain't got no money to hook your bail. Well, Maddie, sweet Maddie, why did you go, Lord, cut that girl? I said, little Maddie, why did you go, Lord, and cut that girl? Well, you know, darling Maddie, ain't no one but you for me in this whole world. Thank you.
Maddie, sweet Maddie, gonna send you on down to that parchment farm. Well, Maddie, sweet Maddie, gonna send you on down to that parchment farm. Oh, didn't mean that girl no kind of harm. My love for you, girl, won't never fail. I said, little Maddie, my love for you won't never fail. I'm so, so sorry, darling, but I've been waiting. If you ever get out, well, I said, Maddie, well, if you ever get out of that stone, well, that stone, baby, hard jail. That's the story about Maddie.
Wow. Wow, that was great. We have a live audience here. It's just me, but that was phenomenal. I really appreciate that, man. That
Thank
was
you.
Really good. It's always good to have live music on the show.
Thanks,
and, man. Hopefully, we have somebody recording it, so you'll allow us to play that back. We'll have to, you know, send you a copy of it. And
sure.
That was incredible.
Thanks.
Very, very good.
Appreciate it.
What do you think? You're touring around the country.
Yep.
Where are some of your favorite places to play?
Some of my favorite places to play. Well. I always liked Jackson, Mississippi, because people are crazy down there. You know, pretty much by the first, second, or third song, someone's going to be drunk and dancing on the table. So that's a lot of fun. I do love coming back up here to the Northeast. I have to admit, one of my favorite places to play is the Lizard Lounge. We always just sell the thing out and have a great time.
Yeah,
and I love to be able to play with my friends up here, especially Peter and the Polecats, you know.
Yeah.
And Peter and I are very close. I produced his solo album that got nominated for Best Debut Album last year, The Mathematics of Love.
Terrific album.
Peter and I became very, very close friends, and we don't get to see each other hardly enough, so that's a blast, you know?
Yeah.
And I have so many roots up here in the New England area. But I love playing in Cognac, France. The Cognac Blues Passions Festival there is an incredible festival. You know, we did 5 days in a row there. It was just such a great thing to be able to stay in one place for 5 days, and for that place to happen to be a beautiful rural village in France is just a bonus. And for Europe, I also love Crissier, Switzerland, which is where the Blues Rules Festival is. We play on the grounds of a little castle. You know, so while you're on stage, you look to the right, and there's a little castle sitting right over there, which is not your typical blues venue. The Slippery Noodle's fun. We like that place. We have a great time in Minnesota. You know, we have a lot of fans up there who come to see us all over the place up there. But Bayport Barbecue is a great stop up there in Bayport, Minnesota.
I got to get out to the Slippery Noodle. That's in Indianapolis, correct?
Yeah, it is. And that's a famous old blues club.
A friend of mine just moved there.
Yep.
About a year ago, 6 months, 8 months ago. He got a job out there. So I got to get out there before he gets back here. Maybe I'll catch you out there.
Because you never know.
Every time you're up here, I'm somewhere else.
Yeah, well, you never know.
Somewhere else. But.
Yeah, but lots of places. We've had a great time playing. We like the Carolinas a lot. We like Asheville a lot. You know, there's... It's a bunch of places.
Now, I noticed you do a lot of solo stuff down around Tennessee, too, correct?
I do a fair amount. Yeah, I do as much as I can. I like playing solo. You know, I get to play quieter stuff like I just played.
Yeah.
And some other Delta blues and some traditional material and just strip it down. And for me, that's really fun. You know, it just kind of allows me to approach the music in a different way.
That's
try to
excellent.
Be a little bit more subtle, stretch things out, so, exercise my fingers differently.
Where does Matt live?
Matt lives in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
But he's from here. He's from Maynard.
Oh, really?
He's from Maynard, and he moved to Nashville last January to join the band.
Oh, all right.
So, and we've been hitting it pretty hard. I think last year we did about 50 dates, and this year it's looking, with the new DVD out and CD package, like it's looking like we're tilting toward about 100 shows this year.
Wow, that's
just a lot
good.
Of road work. For an
it is. Now, you're still writing, right?
Yeah, I'm still writing a little bit on the side and doing all the business for the band, and it's really crazy.
It keeps you.
Yep, it is.
Keeps it's you really busy. Crazy. The business is the worst part of it.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's so time-consuming, you know,
yeah.
And challenging, and, you know, it's just not much fun, you know, but you can't really play unless you're willing to take care of business, you know?
That's true.
And it's sort of funny. Some people would rather just kind of stay in their house and, you know, kind of play music and kind of be by themselves, and more power to them for that. But I like the idea of being able to communicate with people. And I also feel like, even I felt like this as a journalist too, but I feel like as a musician, it's kind of a mission more than just a band. You know, it's like, I want people to know that the blues is great music and that it's historical music, but it's also contemporary music. And I think too often the fact that it's contemporary music kind of gets overlooked, especially by people who are gatekeepers. You know, whether that's people who are organizing festivals or people who are writing about the music and never bother to write about living artists because
yeah.
there's quite a few of them.
Yeah,
you know,
yes.
that whole thing. Well, you know, interestingly, one of the places where I see people being really warm to new blues is on radio. And I don't know, let me ask you a question, Peter.
Okay.
Is that because DJs are always looking for something new? Or is it just because DJs are kind of a little hipper because they're always in the musical milieu? I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I tend to believe that it's DJs looking for something a little new.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that I have a lot of friends that are DJs, and I also worked with people that were DJs that were like I like to call a blues snob.
Yeah, yeah.
If it wasn't pre-1960, then it wasn't blues.
Yeah, I hear a lot of that too.
And I don't agree with that. In fact, I have a very open mind. I listen to probably why your music resonates so much with me, as do R.L. Burnside and all those people. I listen to everything. I'll go to a Nine Inch Nails show and have a great time.
Yep.
You know, it's chaotic and it's blah, 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 but it's rock. And, you know, every once in a while it blows the cobwebs out. But then on the other hand, I'll go see someone like Marsha Ball or, you know, or even Charles Brown.
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone totally on the other end of the spectrum, just very clean, very.
Yep.
I listen to it all. So I'm always looking for new ways of going around here. You know, I play on my show, I play Black Crowes because they do some blues. I love
yep.
that. Well, I love that the band.
Yep.
And, you know, I've done some blues that's maybe not, people wouldn't call blues. But you have to open up to it because I can't say there's nothing more. All these people have passed on. That's the big thing. You know that,
right.
And I know that.
Right.
See, when I was 18 years old, a friend of mine, I ran into this person that was a few years older than I was. And I don't know what it was about him, but something just hit it off. And he said, Peter, he says, I work with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you really ought to come into Boston with me. And I was the only white, I was a white kid, and I was like 18 years old. And I'm in the speakeasy with Buddy Guy and Junior Wells.
Cool.
Next thing you know, I'm with John Lee Hooker, and then J.B. Hutto, and all these other people. And
yeah, probably Freddie King back then.
James Cotton.
You're probably a little too young for Freddie King, I'll bet. Is that
yeah,
right?
Freddie yeah. King. Well, I'm 52.
Because he passed away early.
So that was 34 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he had probably just passed away.
Yep.
But I saw Albert King.
Yep.
You know, I've seen, you know, Sonnyland Slim, a lot of people.
Albert Collins.
Albert Collins. I'll tell you a story about Albert Collins. I was down in New Orleans with my mom and dad go with me every year. They started me going to New Orleans.
Yep.
I was on a riverboat with Stevie Ray Vaughan, Katie Webster, and John Hammond or B.B. King. Maybe it was B.B. King anyway, when they did the riverboat shows.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was on the riverboat seeing this show, and there was actually a video done of it. And when we pulled back into the port, all of a sudden, the band just kept playing, and now everybody was on stage, and Albert Collins showed up and started playing. So the next day, I come out of the show, it's probably 2 or 3 in the morning, and my mom's standing outside there going, hey, how was the show? You know, whatever. I said, oh, it was great. You know, it was my first year in New Orleans, so she's very cautious. I'm 52 years old. She's still, don't be careful going out at night, you know? You know what I mean? I'm like,
yep.
You know, she's in her, I'm going to get killed, but I'm not right. I won't go any further. But so anyway, what happened was we went to Jazz Fest the next day, and I said, I've really got to go see Albert Collins. And we're over there, and Albert Collins comes on the stage, and she says, who is that guy? I said, that's Albert Collins. She goes, you got to be kidding me. She goes, when I was waiting for the boat to come in last night, that guy was talking my ear off. Or I talked his ear off. She goes, all night, she goes, you know, we just started talking. I thought that was kind of funny.
That is funny.
You know what I mean? It's like Mom didn't know who Albert Collins was. Next thing you know, she's at the show, and she had already met him
yep.
and didn't realize.
Yep.
But it's just amazing. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but it is, I do really like that about DJs. You know, we're getting a lot of airplay, which is great. It's nice that people have welcomed us, you know, in that respect. For this record, you know, yes. it's our fifth thing. So it's nice that it feels like.
Well, I play your Christmas CD too.
Oh, that Christmas song. Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you, that Christmas song. You know what I did with that thing? I had just got a computer with GarageBand, yeah. and I said, okay, I'm going to teach myself how to do this. In 4 hours, I want to write and record a song. So I wrote that thing, and I recorded it in GarageBand, and I thought, well, this sounds pretty good. So I burned about 20 copies and sent it to my favorite DJs. And that's the yeah. extent to which that exists. It's funny, you know? Someday we might record that thing for real, yeah. you know? I also kind of think that it might be fun to do a six-song Christmas EP sometime.
Yeah, that would, you know, I have to tell you, being a DJ, and, you know, I'm on college radio, which is great because another thing, too, is look what's happened to the radio situation in Boston. There is, Holly Harris is gone from BOS.
Yep. Which was
GBH, Mae Kramer. You know, Brendan Hogan took over, and now he's at UMB. UMB, I'm
UMB,
sorry.
Yep.
But I mean, pretty much you got Peter Black still down on the South Shore doing ATD.
Yep.
And John Garigian and Lowell.
Yep.
Doing JUL.
Yep. And you got Greg Sarny at BRS.
Yeah, and BRS, but it's all college.
Yep. It is all college.
Pretty much, except for ATD.
And Carter Allen, he's got his
Sunday Morning Blues. In fact, I ran into Carter and told him that sometimes I listen to his show to get psyched for my show.
Cool.
So I was hoping he would reciprocate and say, I listen to your show, but no. I, like I said, we have.
You never know. Carter's a good, he's a cool
guy.
He
is.
You never know. He,
I was talking to him one night, and it's funny because I play off of things, and I have a. My CD collection is just out of control, and it's so much fun to hear something and then say, geez, do I have that? And go back and just dig stuff out and start to go on a whole new jag because, you know, you get on these, you know, I get on these new CDs coming in, and we do have a spot for new CDs here, and,
yep.
and it's there's so much that, you know, I try to gear my show, and then I'm a little more New Orleans-based, too, because I love New Orleans,
that's great
and I
music.
Love those guys down there.
Great music, great city, great food.
Exactly. What isn't there to like about?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, the radio, there isn't much radio, so now it's all college, which is huge, and I figured this CD would be phenomenal to play. I've been playing it since I got it.
Oh, thanks.
You know what I mean? You get the college kids listening to it. I could see how it would resonate with people.
Well,
of a younger age.
The whole thing wouldn't exist except for Robert Muggy. You know, he got the idea to make the movie about us. And while we were there, we did a live concert in Red Key, Indiana, as the spine, and half of that live concert is what ended up being the actual recording as well. So
yeah, the spine. What is that? The Keys.
Yeah, the Key Palace in Red Key.
The Key Palace.
Yeah,
all
we
right,
keep
all
coming
right.
back to that performance.
Yeah,
that
what a beautiful hall.
It's a great place. It's an old vaudeville house that guy Charlie Noble, who's in the movie, and he actually passed away before the DVD came out. So it's a DVD CD. So it's dedicated to him. But Charlie bought this place. It had no roof on it. And he had a vision that he would make it into a blues club. And he literally rebuilt it himself. Literally himself.
Yeah.
In the 50s, he was a high iron worker. 40s and 50s in Chicago. So he worked on the Sears Tower and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he definitely had some skills. And he kept this place running for 30-something odd years. And then, unfortunately, you know, succumbed to cancer after a long struggle.
Oh, that's sad.
But he was a character. And he did a great job with this
place. I wished he had brought us into the shacks.
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, I wish he had too, because the shacks are beautiful inside.
Yeah.
They're like luxe hotel rooms. They have these gorgeous polished pinewood floors, and in one of them, he's actually taken a gas station sign, like not a metal gas station sign, but the giant illuminated ones you see from the highway.
Yeah.
He's cut that in half and inset it in the ceiling, and there's license plates from all over the country. It's a blast.
It really piqued my interest because he said that he was very interesting, and you were standing out on the porch of this. These shacks, and he said they were Mississippi. I can't remember.
Yeah, he was down in Clarksdale.
Yeah.
And there's a place called the Shack Up Inn that took old sharecropper shacks and remade them into hotel rooms. Also a great place.
Yeah.
They also have a cotton gin that's been made into smaller hotel rooms instead
wow.
of freestanding rooms. So if you're ever down in Clarksdale, just pass by and say hi. You know, everyone there is very friendly. Guy is the guy who owns it, and he always is up for talking to people, and Mark works behind the counter, and she's really friendly. So the Shackle Pin is always worth a look-see when you're down in Clarksdale for the Jute Joint Festival or
I got to get down there to Mississippi. That's people tell me, you know, Peter, you got to get out of New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, you'd love it, man. You should next April if you get a chance. Well, it's right before New Orleans, but the second weekend of April is always the Jute Joint Festival.
Oh, really?
And it's laid back, it's fun, it's small, there's usually at least 8 bands playing at the same time in different parts of town. They've got great food. They've got gumbo and catfish and, you know, all the stuff you want to have.
Yeah.
And it's really a great place. It's a great festival. And the city of Clarksdale doesn't look like it's evolved much since about 1964. So you definitely have a good vibe. Yeah,
yeah.
It is. Yeah, it is. I'm not sure it's always the best thing if you live there.
Yeah.
But as a blues tourist, it's pretty much, you know, as close to ground zero as you can get.
You can't get that.
Uh-uh.
You can't get that. And that's what the DVD did, too, was the DVD. The things that you went around and did and everything, it was just phenomenal. And when you were in uncovering the...
Oh, yeah, in Red Key.
Charlie
Patton.
Red Key, in Richmond, Indiana. Yeah, Charlie Patton and... Yeah. The other artists that you're out there and you're digging them up with the snow and trying to see.
It was Jeanette Records Walk of Fame.
Yeah, Jeanette Records, that's
and,
right.
And, you know, I didn't really know. I mean, I knew Charlie Patton had recorded for Jeanette Records and Lonnie Johnson had, but I had no idea what a completely rich legacy they had until we got there and met Bob and he started talking about it. But that was interesting. One of the things that we really do here, I think, is uncover the underexposed blues history of the Midwest. In this thing.
You do,
and there's
yes.
a big one. There's a big yes. history in the Midwest. A lot. Everybody didn't go to Chicago.
No.
They went to Indianapolis.
Or
they
Texas.
Went to St. Louis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They went to a lot of other places when they got out of the Deep South.
Yeah. Which yeah, definitely. I agree. And just listening to you, whenever I talk with you or I hear, it's like a learning experience. You can tell that you're a writer. Because, you know, I have a hard time portraying what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But you were so smooth and at the end of your conversation or at the end of like the DVD, I'm like, wow, I've learned so much from this 90 minutes. It was just phenomenal.
It's funny. Looking at it, besides the fact that I'm in every scene, which really freaks me out, especially when it's on a big screen, you know, it's like my head is like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
I do tend to talk a little fast. I realized watching that. It's like, okay, I'm spewing, you know, I'm just spewing it. It can become, I hope it's not too much information, you know?
No, it isn't. It is, like I said, with Rob in it, you know, it was halfway through the movie before he said anything. I was like, wow. You know, but why would he? I mean, if I was traveling with you, I couldn't explain things the way you do. But I get the same thing, you know, it's like... I have people call me up when I do my blues calendar and they say, could you slow down?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sorry, you know, I have looked this over. I just wrote it hours earlier, so it's fresh in my mind and I want to get it all.
Yeah.
Can you slow down?
And it's kind of a New England thing, too, you know, like being up here. It's funny, like I've spent a lot of time in the South since the 90s and I've kind of acquired certain things in my speech pattern that are a little on the Southern side. But I can't slow it down.
Yeah.
And it's funny because people go like, where are you from? You sound like you're from down south, but you talk like you're from up north.
New England,
it's like, well, yeah.
Yeah, us New Englanders.
You got me.
Yeah, you have to get used to it. You have to get very used to it.
Yep.
You're listening to WMWM Salem. I have to get my station ID in here just for the FCC so we don't, you know, go out of too much. We have... Ted Drozowski in the studio from the Sizzaman, and he's doing shows. Thursday night, he'll be at Club Passam. He'll be doing work with Brendan Hogan and Peter Pacek.
Yep, opening for Brendan and Peter, who are two very dear friends. I love those guys, and good artists, too, I gotta say.
Yes, oh, most definitely. And then you'll be at the Back Page in Lowell with the 10-foot Polecats and Peter Pacek. Is he?
No, just 10-foot Polecats.
Just 10-foot Polecats.
And you know, this band has never been to Lowell before, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow.
Looking forward to it. And I guess it's going to be live broadcast on WCAP up there, too, at least part of it.
Oh, so, nice.
Should be cool.
Great. And then you're in Northampton at 11?
Yeah, the 11s.
11s?
And I've never been there, but I'm told it's a great place. And that's almost a mini festival. It's us, it's the 10-foot Polecats, it's Molly Jean, one-woman band, and a couple of other artists from out in that area, too.
Wow.
I don't have my list with me, unfortunately, so I apologize for not remembering. If anyone's listening, I apologize, but I don't remember your name. But we're going to do that, and it's a benefit as well for a healthcare organization. So, and I believe it starts at 6 o'clock and goes late. So I think we're all playing full concert length sets.
Great.
So it's going to be an interesting experience and a lot of fun. And I love to play long. I mean, you know, if I don't play for at least 90 minutes, I feel like I'm cheating everybody.
Yeah,
including myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's too much.
You don't
fun.
Get the work. Then you're going to go to the gym. No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah. But so in other words, if they make the 2.5 hour trip out to Northampton, it'll be well worth it.
There's going to be a lot of music. There's going to be day and a night full of music.
Excellent.
So it's worth going out there and grabbing a room if you want to and just staying.
Yeah, true. That's that's even a better deal.
Yep. Plus, Northampton's a cool place.
It is very cool. I haven't been out there in a while. I used to go. They had a festival out there at one time, the Blues and Brews Festival or something, and I think it's moved a little closer to Boston.
Yeah, you know, I haven't been out in Northampton in years, I have to say, but yeah, it's a cool little town, you know?
It is.
It's they got nice bookstores and good places to eat and multiple ice cream shops and a cool old record store and nice old-fashioned New England buildings. You put all that together, and it's, I like that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And from the Hustle and Bustle, you want to play another tune for us?
Yeah. How about When the Devil Calls?
That would be great.
What is it? Oh, it was just something I was thinking about one day. I like writing ghost stories, so this is a ghost story. The next album, we've got a bunch of interesting things coming. You know, we're already well into writing another album. I've got about 17 songs done for that, and about 10 that I think I really, really like a lot. And the rest of them, we're going to keep kicking them to see if they shape up a little more. And I'm just going to keep writing. You know, I think we'll probably end up tracking for that again in September. We'll probably start on that one, you know. But right now, we're busy touring. And this is a song. It was originally recorded on Luck in a Hurry, but it also shows up here on Big Shoes because I do get to play some of the acoustic stuff since that was at a concert hall instead of a beer joint. So we played some acoustic stuff or stripped down. And anyway, I'll just be quiet and play a song called When the Devil Calls My Name. Heard a cool wind creeping like a mole through my back door. Heard my name get mentioned. Oh, and I didn't hear nothing no more. 'Cause you know it's not the same. Well, once the devil's called your name, yeah, you know your life's changed. When the devil calls your name, I have been a good man, least I think I'm one. Never shot nobody, not taken with my gun, but I know. Yeah, I know things got strange. And my life has gotten so wicked. Well, since the devil called my name, stand liars, don't care nothing about a thief, but a man will do what a man will do to stay on his own feet. And I know, and I know that it's all changed. And I won't never get to heaven,
'cause the devil called my name. Call my name.
That was great.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
That was actually inspired. Tell the truth, that was actually inspired by a line from T-Model Ford.
Yep.
I was sitting in the old House of Blues dressing room one day, back in the day, and T-Model was up there with Spam, the first drummer he toured with.
Yeah.
And he and Spam were always arguing and bickering, and he was always threatening to cut, you know, Spam with his jackknife and stuff. He said, Spam, he says out of nowhere, Spam, you're so dumb, you're going to get both of us took straight to hell. In fact, I think I just heard the devil call my name. And I thought, okay, that's stuck in my brain.
Excuse me. Yeah, so there you go.
Yep, yep. When the devil calls, thank you, T-Model Ford.
Wow. It's funny how things come to you. You know, it's songs and whatever, but it's always great to hear a story like that.
Well, T-Model's eminently quotable, if nothing else.
Yeah. What you can quote of him.
Yeah, exactly. Man, talk about a character. But he's still chugging away, you know. He's 90. He's had, strokes and heart attacks, and I don't know how much longer we're going to have him, but we still have him. Sometimes he plays the same song all night long.
Well, look at Honey Boy.
Yeah. Now, Honey Boy was still, you know, he could still perform really well when he got way up in his
90s. I saw him do the Robert Johnson thing, the 100th year of Robert Johnson.
Yep.
And here's Hubert Sumlin and all these other people. Honey Boy was the only one, 95 years old, walked to the back of the crowd with his cane, sat down and met everybody that came to stand in line to meet him.
Last time I saw him was when we played Juke Joint Festival last year down in Clarksdale, and Honey Boy was there. I walk into Medidi, which is the fancy restaurant that Morgan Freeman has down there, because somebody was taking us in there. And there's Honey Boy across the room drinking a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
So I went down and sat next to Honey Boy, and we had a beer and had a nice chat with him for a while. I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years, so it was really great to see him. And he signed this guitar for me, too. We played the Juke Joint Festival on the same bill in 1990. So I got his signature on this one at that point.
Excellent. Yeah, I see Kenny Brown.
Yep, Kenny
Brown. Jesse May.
Yep, Jesse May.
Otis Rush.
Ronnie Earl, of course. Dick Dale, Duke Robillard, Dwayne Eddy, Ike Turner, Big Jack Johnson, and, of course, my main man, R.L. Burnside.
He didn't write Judy a friend, Brown. Huh?
He did not.
Yeah.
I have one of those at home, though.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do.
It was so funny because I took pictures of R.L. Burnside, and I brought him to get autographed.
Yep.
And I had spoke to Cedric, and at the time, it was like one of the last times he had toured. And at the time, you know, I said, Cedric, I'd like your grandfather to sign my photo, if that's possible. He says, yeah, no problem. He says, but, you know, it's a little crazy up there. It's at the House of Blues in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He says, so why don't you give him to me and I'll bring him upstairs? I said, no problem. So he brought him up. And 10 minutes later, he came back. And it was funny because most people that want their photo signed want it in the front.
Yep.
R.L. signed it on the back.
He signed it on the back?
R.L. Burnside, a friend. Because he didn't want to sign it on the front of the photo.
I've got a friend. I also have one. He didn't like the way he signed it the first time.
Yeah.
So he signed it again. So I have one photograph that says R.L. Burnside, R.L. Burnside.
That's incredible. So the guitar, I see Kenny Brown.
Yep. And I had a couple other people, too. I had Reeves Gabrels up here, who was a friend and influence. I had Robert Cage over here. But I lost those because I had an accident with a ceiling fan in a club in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, and my guitar was covered in blood, so I had to wash that out instead of having the biohazard left on the, left on the guitar. I didn't want my guitar to be a hazardous waste site.
Yeah, I remember Reeves. He was for years. He's down in Tennessee, isn't he?
He's in Nashville. Yeah, occasionally we end up playing together. Sometimes he'll come bring his guitar when we're playing at
our favorite club
down there. Man, we get into some crazy stuff together. We did the song Delta Train on this album together last time. Yep. And we took that thing way out into space, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, with Reeves, of course, in the lead. I mean, he's a great, you know, he's a great, great, great guitar player.
Yes, he
is.
But
I was chasing his heels pretty hard.
But the thing is, he's unpredictable.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He could take things to different levels, which I feel that you do, too.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm pretty unpredictable.
And that's what's incredible.
Yeah, we don't often play a song exactly the same way twice.
Well, yeah, but it's great. Yeah, that's what you want.
Yeah, we like to leave room in there so we can stretch it. And, you know, Matt is really good at that, too. Matt Snow, the drummer, man. He'll change up beats and just kind of get different feels and stuff and really work it hard.
Yeah.
And throw in surprising things, you know. I mean, he's a younger guy than me, so all of a sudden I'll be taking a solo and I'll hear something start to change on the beat and he'll drop into a hip-hop groove. So then I'll start playing like a funky thing on the guitar, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll be from this crazy cosmic, you know, Mississippi Delta thing into some deep funk. So you never know where it's going to go.
That's incredible. Well, and of course, when it's just you and a drummer out on tour.
Yeah, which is pretty liberating.
You pretty much got to live in each other's heads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, for better or worse.
Yeah. Do you often get off and say, that really didn't work out? Or, you know, that really worked out well?
Not usually. We don't worry about it. And I especially don't like to overthink things.
Yeah.
You know, because I think as a musician, once you start thinking about stuff, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's raw and it's loose, and that's the way it can be. So that way, you know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, the more you can just kind of concentrate on the experience and,
keep
exactly what you're, and, you know, not really worry about what you're playing, let inspiration come in, then the more fun you're going to have and the better show it's going to be for people.
Don't think about it too much.
Yeah. Otherwise, it kind of makes you too serious. And, you know, it's funny, when I first started playing music a lot, I used to play when I was a kid in Connecticut and stuff. But when I first started playing a lot, I was already living in Boston and I had been writing about music for a number of years. So for about the first 50 or 60 shows I ever had to play, I was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in one body. I'd be playing music and critiquing it as I was playing it, you know?
Yeah.
And I finally had to make that voice get out of my head. And now that voice is long gone when I play, I'm happy to say. Because that voice is not a good voice for a musician.
No.
You don't need somebody over your shoulder all the time, especially yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can't pull anything, pull anything away. And, you know, you're going to catch yourself all the time.
Exactly.
If anyone's going to be second-guessing you, it should be someone else.
Exactly. So you're working on a new album now.
Yeah, well, we're working on material for a new album now. We're playing a lot of those songs out, too. Some of it's psychedelic, some of it's deeply rooted. We got one thing that's kind of a Bo Diddley shuffle, because we have never played a Bo Diddley shuffle before, so we thought we'd kind of do a little Bo Diddley thing. And it's going in a bunch of different directions. I've written some songs about my family, like there's a new song called Black Lung Fever. I like to joke and tell people that it's a feel-good tune, but it's actually about my... My grandparents, speaking of black lung.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, I have this scratch in my throat. I can't get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I never met either of my grandfathers because they were, came from Poland right into the coal mines in Pennsylvania, and they both died of black lung in their 40s. So that song's about, you know, my family and, you know, them being coal miners and passing away early. And my mother growing up being the, a daughter in a family of 13 children. You know, essentially no dad. He was still alive at the time, but he was also not the nicest guy. So none of the money trickled back to the family. My grandmother had to raise everybody with the crops that she could sell in town. And my mother literally didn't have any shoes until she went to kindergarten. So,
wow.
You know, that's so that kind of all inspired that song.
Wow. It sounds. Wow, that's heavy.
Yeah, yeah. Four verses and a couple of solos.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
All right, well, I thank you for coming down.
Oh, thanks. It's been a pleasure. It's great to see you, too, man. It's good. You know, I mean, we always used to be at those shows at the House of Blues in the old days.
Exactly.
Or at Johnny D's, watching Ronnie Earl rip it up, or Luther Allison.
Exactly.
Or, man, you know, who's the guy who used to wear the turban? Sonny Rhodes.
Yeah, Sonny Rhodes.
There was so much
Sonny
great
Rhodes.
Stuff we saw back then. That was such a wonderful place, wasn't it?
It was amazing, yeah.
Man, Teo really made that place sparkle.
He did. And that was the people he had up there. It was incredible.
Incredible. I got such an education there. And also, like, you got to see the speakeasy. I wasn't here then, but for me, the other place that was Night Stage.
Yeah, Night Stage, yeah.
Where I got to see Albert King and Etta James and Sippy Wallace and Johnny Shines. And,
Luther Allison and Johnny Clyde Copeland open up for him.
Yep. And Bernard was on guitar that night.
Yes.
I remember that night.
And it was incredible, the things. And then we had Jonathan Swift's.
Yep.
I saw John Lee Hooker
That's
in there.
That's right, Jonathan Swift's. Yeah, that was
a great
place.
Peter Wolf would be sitting in the back of the stage.
Yep.
He'd just be mesmerized. He'd be incredible. A buddy guy going into the ladies' room.
Yep.
And then he always kicked it out the front door.
Yep.
And harassed the people in line for the second show.
Yep.
But he'd be gone. I saw Big Mama Thornton. At Jonathan Swift's.
That's a big deal.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Huge because I was young and naive at the time, and of course she came out on stage, and I'm looking for this big woman.
Right.
And she wasn't a big woman anymore.
Yeah, no, she was.
She was
sick
a
at that point.
Very elderly woman,
yep.
Thin woman with
yep.
a 3-piece suit on.
Yep.
So we're looking for Big Mama Thornton, and what virtually could be a man,
yep.
has
yep.
walked out on the stage and started singing.
Yep, she was it Little was, Mama Thornton.
Yeah. It was very, very interesting.
But that was kind of a, you know, there was kind of a golden age for blues in this city.
It was.
At that point, and it was pretty delightful. It was pretty awesome to be part of it and be able to be an observer and get to learn so much firsthand by seeing these people perform.
And I miss it a lot.
Yeah, same here.
Miss it a lot.
Yep, and a lot of the people, too.
Yeah, exactly. In May and everybody.
Yeah,
and all,
May, yep.
You know, and nobody does it anymore.
No, they don't. And at that point, Boston was so, it was a major stop for blues.
Yes.
You know, from the 70s through the 90s.
That's like, well, Greg Sonny did the Boston Blues Festival, and that's gone into the wayside.
Which was a great event.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know Greg lost a lot of money and worked very hard and,
yes.
you know, gave a lot of blood and sweat for that thing, but it was such a great event when they had it.
Can't understand.
Little Joe Hughes. Where else are you going to see Little Joe Hughes outside of Texas?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly. That was
great stuff.
Yeah. It's sad. Sad to see. But, you know, as long as I'm doing it and you're doing it, you know, if you keep
That's
coming
right,
through
this
town.
Is the, yeah, this is the next group yeah. carrying it on.
And you'll be back through town, I imagine.
Yep. I'm thinking we might be back in October, but not dead sure yet. It looks All like right. we're going to be signing with a booking agency. And when we do that, then it'll be up to them to dispatch us. For
oh,
a while.
Huge.
Yeah, that'll be more fun than booking the band myself.
That's good. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It'll take a lot of pressure off you.
It will. It'll take a lot of pressure off me. I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Ted.
Oh,
I appreciate
thank you for having
it.
Me, Peter. I it.
And I hope your shows anytime you're in town, feel free. You know, maybe
thank you.
Get you on a little earlier and
thank
spend
you.
A little more time talking about. And don't say hi to your lovely wife, Lori.
I will say hi to Lori.
I haven't seen her in a long time.
Yep, she didn't come up for this trip, but she was up for the last one. So she comes up every so often for these.
That's
things.
Great. I miss seeing you down in New Orleans.
Yeah, we haven't been down that much lately, although we did go last year.
Did you?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we were down there for the first weekend last year.
Oh,
so
all
it was
right.
good to get back to Jazz
yeah.
Fest. And they asked me to have a oyster po' boy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking forward to a bowl of gumbo.
Yeah, you know, you have gumbo everywhere.
Yeah.
Doesn't taste the same as it does in New Orleans.
No. And I make a pretty good gumbo.
Yep. I'll bet you do. I make a jambalaya that's real good.
Yeah. Yeah. From scratch,
yeah,
right?
Between the two of us.
Yeah.
we'll have
a New Orleans feed.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you very much. And you are listening to WMWM Salem 91.7 FM. This is WM, and I am Peter. This has been The Juke Joint.